This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. You're listening to the Gravity Commons Podcast. My friend Ben Sternke joins me today. Christy Penley is having some connection issues with her internet. So she may join us for this intro, but maybe not. I'm prepared to soldier on without her, even though
We're trying to be brave. I think we're doing okay so far.
Little space in my heart that only Christy can fill.
Yeah.
Of course, the Jesus space is bigger, Ben.
Well, yeah, I wasn't silently judging you.
All right, I just wanted you to know. Jesus is first in my heart. This week, Ben, you and I are going to, next week, we're going to Denver.
Freaked me out just a little bit.
Sorry, man.
And then I thought, who's probably wrong about the schedule? And I thought, it's probably Matt. I have nothing to worry about.
Oh, gosh,
nothing to worry about. Next week, we're going to Theology Beer Camp in Denver.
Yeah.
I think there's still time to join us, and I think the last I looked, I think there's going to be like 600 people there.
Wow.
It's kind of a big event, a big deal, a bunch of nerds. I don't think you have to be a nerd to come, but there's going to be a lot of theology nerds there.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be there. I was realizing, Matt, that we've got some friends and acquaintances who are coming out to be there with us. And I realized that I was excited to hang out with them because we are not speaking at this. Neither are we, like, we don't have like a booth at this thing.
We're not presenting. I realized, we're not vendors. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not vendors, but we are like a featured podcast that's there. And so I actually don't know what that means, except that we're going to get to like listen to talks and hang out with people.
Yeah.
And I found myself like, actually, this would be a really fun trip.
This will be like the first conference like this for me in a long time. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've been to places where we like have an official booth presence, you know, like we're doing like that kind of a thing. And, you know, I hope nobody, you know, I really dislike that. Mm-hmm. Some people I think enjoy that kind of vibe. But I don't.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to, being there and listening to the talks. I'm excited about, some of the speakers I know that are going to be there.
Yeah.
And yeah, just the people to be able to hang out. So,
yeah, it's not too late to register. You can use code Gravity Hobbit and join us out there.
Yes. Yes.
Also, just one vibe check before we get into the interview. Christy Penley has joined us.
Hey. Mm. Sorry, y'all.
Christy has joined the chat. We were just talking about how much we miss you and how we wish you were with us and how we're trying to be brave and soldier on.
How I love you.
Look at there.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus has answered our prayers.
Yep. That's because I kept Jesus first in my heart.
Oh, yep. Wow. It was.
I did tell everybody that I loved you a little less than Jesus.
I had to discipline him a little bit and say, that's idolatry, Matt. Get Jesus back in first place. And then you appeared. So
then here I am.
It was the chastisement I needed. and it actually is helping me heal what's within.
Hey, that was a great segue, Matt Tebbe.
Nice.
Speaking of that.
Wow. Okay.
That's the topic of our conversation today. We were talking to Chuck DeGroat about his latest book, Healing What's Within. He's a professor of pastoral care and Christian spirituality at Western Theological Seminary.
Woohoo!
And Christy's hometown of Holland, Michigan, where he also serves as the founding executive director of the Clinical Mental Health Counseling Program. He's a licensed therapist, spiritual director, author, retreat leader, speaker, and faculty member with the Soul Care Institute. As a therapist, he specializes in navigating issues of abuse and trauma, pastoral and leadership health, and doubt, and dark nights of the faith journey. He trains clergy in handling issues of abuse and trauma, conducts pastor and planter assessments, and facilitates church consultants and investigations of abuse. Before transitioning to training and forming pastors, Chuck served as a pastor in Orlando and San Francisco. He and his wife, Sarah, have been married for 30 years and have two adult daughters, and somehow he found time in all of that to spend a little bit of time with us. So, listener, get ready for a great interview. Chuck, welcome back to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Yeah, great to be here. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too, man. Last time you were sharing before we hit play, last time we recorded a podcast, we were live and in person there in Western Michigan in your office. I think it was seven years ago, and it feels like a different world.
It does. Yeah, that was pre-COVID. That was maybe a bit into the Trump administration, so I'm sure we're in some kind of place at that point.
Yeah.
I did not realize you were 6'10", though, when we first met. So that was different.
Well, I must have had grown my hair out because my hair adds an extra foot to my height. Well, Chuck, it's good to see you again. Good to be back together with you again. And we're chatting today about a new book that is coming out soon. Called Healing What's Within, Coming Home to Yourself When You're Wounded, Weary, and Wondering. I wonder, I know most of the writing you do comes out of your life and your work.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could just give us maybe a short narrative of how this book came to be.
Yeah. Well, so I'd written a book on narcissism in the church before this, right? And there was a lot of conversation around narcissism and spiritual abuse that emerged out of that. And also some interest from, you know, publishers on what would a part two of that look like. And I really wasn't convinced that that was my work to do or my book to write at that point. And so I sat for a while discerning. And, you know, I'm a therapist. I was a pastor for a number of years. I teach at a seminary. And so there are these different intersections of my work. But what seemed important to me was in the midst of all this conversation about abuse, like how do we do the deeper work of healing? Which is to say that abuse is what happens to you, but trauma is what happens within you. And we need to direct our attention to that wound that abuse leaves behind. And so I work with people who experience all kinds of abuses and might even experience some justice in the midst of that, right? There might be some justice or reconciliation, and yet there's a wound left behind. And the question is, how do we turn our attention to that wound that's left behind?
Chuck, you know, I've heard a lot of sermons about things we have to do, things we should know, but not very many sermons on like the body. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how our bodies are important to Christian formation and how we need to learn to really listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I sort of learned this the hard way. I tell this story, to some extent in the book too, where I ended up in a hospital in Cabo, Mexico. So I'm in this Mexican hospital with all kinds of pain, and they finally discovered that I have gallstones. And so they say, we need your credit card because we need to swipe it for like the $30,000 charge. Oof. So I had to get my friend to do that. And then we're going to take out your gallbladder, but they go in, they realize my system is septic, like my body. And this is in like 2012. And so I'm a therapist at this time. Like I've been doing this and I'm fairly established in the work. I had started, 1997. Right. And so I've been doing the work, a lot of self-awareness, could connect the dots in my own story, was trying to do some work out in San Francisco where I was on, church planner formation, creating healthier pastors. And here I'm unhealthy and my body, well, of course, keeps the score, right? Mm-hmm. And that was my wake-up call. And what I often say nowadays is that we talk a lot about self-awareness. And I would say 25 years ago when I first got into this, we were just happy that people were beginning to become self-aware, like go to a therapist. And then, you know, people start getting into the Enneagram and they know that they're Myers-Briggs and they can connect the dots in their own story. But self-awareness doesn't necessarily lead to self-regulation. Yeah. And that's that sympathetic nervous system on overdrive, what I call storm, you know, as we find ourselves in a place where we're going, I'm really self-aware. I can connect all the dots in my story, but I haven't stopped in 2 weeks. And that's where I found myself. And so, and what will happen is that the body will start to send signals. You get signals in a lot of ways, your thoughts, your emotions, your behaviors, interpersonal relationships, and your body. And you have to start to listen for that data. And it can come in lots of different forms, right? Like maybe a sore throat, Christy. Sleeplessness, you know, back aches and neck aches, and your jaw starts to hurt. You know, you're tired all the time. But then and your thoughts and your judgments and your hypervigilance and your emotions, I'm really sad. I'm really ashamed. And so we have to listen.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, we could probably spend the rest of our time talking about that, Chuck, in terms of the body, how the body has been thought of in Christian spirituality throughout the years, and how some of us inherit unhelpful or insufficient scripts about our bodies, that they're, you know, that there are these unfortunately corrupt meat suits that one day will be rid of, or that they're a place or a space of either shame and embarrassment or temptation and passion, and they have to be tamed, or we have to distance ourselves from them. But I'm so glad, Chuck, that we're actually reclaiming the body as not only something we can't get away from, thank God, but a good gift.
Yeah.
And a place of actually a meeting place with God. And you start your book with this metaphor of coming home to ourselves with the invitation of befriending our pain. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could say more about that. Like, how does responding to that summons, how would that help us become more embodied as we do that?
Yeah. So my sense is that the oldest story that we often tell is that story, that great, often tragic story of Genesis chapter 3, right? I call it a story of primal trauma or primal disconnection. We've often told it as a story of everything that went wrong, the big bad thing that Adam and Eve did that now we've inherited in some strange way, and now we're doing all the big bad things that they did, right? But really, I see it as a story of disconnection. And the reality is, however you want to think about that historically or not, I don't happen to think it's historical, but I think it's an awfully powerful story that informs our lives. We live in disconnection. We live in dissociation. That's the inheritance in a sense. That's our generational story, a story of disconnection. And it's a primal one too. I think to some extent, the old poet and priest George Herbert once said, "I cried when I was born, and every day shows why." To some extent, after we're born, like, we find ourselves in this world of brokenness, of pain, of disappointment. Like, mom and dad will never be able to love us well enough for us to be secure at every moment of the day, right? And so there is that sense of what's wrong with me. We become disconnected from our emotions, our bodies, our thoughts, our intuitions. And there is this process of reclamation that involves us paying attention. And that's really where it begins. The first question that God asks in Genesis chapter 3 is, "Where are you?" And I think it's a question that invites us to attention. Really, where am I? Because I've been dissociated, disconnected for the large part of my day. I had this podcast to do, and then I had to get to this meeting, and then I had this email to return, and all the things. And really, I haven't eaten for 3 hours, I'm really tired, and I haven't paid attention to how weary I am over the last week. It begins by listening to our emotions, to our thoughts, to our bodily intuitions, and I like that word befriending, because there is that sense of curiosity and compassion that we extend to parts of us that carry pain, you know, the sad part of me that, you know, just feels, looks at the world right now and just feels this deep ache inside. And I often stay disconnected from that sad part of me because I've got other things to do. But what if I just stop and put my hand on my chest and breathe? Say, I'm feeling really, really sad. The world is in so much pain. Let me just get to know what that's like.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Hey, the Gravity Commons podcast is supported by Respero. Henry Nouwen once wrote, "The role of a counselor is to help people not suffer for the wrong reasons," which I really like. This is one of the guiding principles of Respero's counselor training. They equip you to listen deeply, ask great questions, and speak words of life into the hearts and minds of hurting people. Their training cohorts, which a lot of our listeners have actually gone through and have said that they really enjoy. Their training cohorts feature lots of personal interaction and practice with feedback, and it's all rooted in the belief that Jesus is the source of life. So check it out at respero.org and learn how to move people toward real transformation, not just symptom removal.
And if I may, Ben, for pastors and ministry leaders, Respero's training is kind of a proven way to identify people in your church who have a gift for counseling and helping others. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church a genuine healing community. So they provide training and supervision that will allow your people to do great work and free up the pastoral staff, right? So, you know, I think we as pastors, we understand our job is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And I think Respero then kind of digs a little deeper and actually gives those saints sort of the hard and soft skills of how to do the work, right?
Yeah.
So go to Respero, RESPERO.org, and click on the counselor training tab. Listener, this ad is different than other ads. Ben and I are going to be at a conference, and we want you to join us. We did a national gathering for Gravity in 2017. We did a grief kind of retreat last summer, and we've been looking for ways to gather this year with all y'all because we love spending time with you, and we got invited into something called Theology Beer Camp, which is October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. We're joining a host of other people from around the country. We're going to do some podcasting there. Ben, who all is going to be there?
I'm excited about Ilya Delio.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The unbearable wholeness of being changed my life.
Yeah, incredible. Brian McLaren's going to be there. Diana Butler-Bass, Brian Zond.
We know him.
Other folks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's going to be lots of podcasting, lots of keynote speaking, and lots of time to hang out. There's going to be a lot of relational time, and we may even record some podcasts. We'd love to record podcasts even with you, listener. They've given us a discount code for all of our listeners because we are a sponsor. Yeah. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit, that'll give you an idea of the kind of gathering we're doing here. You get $25 off tickets. Prices go up soon, so register today.
Yep. Beer is optional, by the way.
Yeah, but theology isn't.
Theology isn't, but the beer is optional. All right, that code again, or the website again, friends, is gravitycommons.com/theologycamp, and make sure to use our code GravityHobbit, two Bs, to get $25 off tickets. Hope to see you there.
Let's get back to the show. Christy, this is reminding me of your dissertation.
Yeah, I was actually just going to bring that up because I did my dissertation on does growing your emotional intelligence increase your perceived intimacy with God? You know, so many churches talk about, oh, if you want to become more intimate with God, you know, read your Bible, go to church, pray, those things are good. But what about actually growing your emotional intelligence? And I think that that is also true about our like bodies.
Yeah.
If we were able to notice, name, and navigate what was going on in our bodies, I think it would be an opportunity for us to be more honest with God and in a place where maybe God could break in and teach and show and invite us into places that we may not have been aware of if we didn't give that time and attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So,
Yeah, can I share one other thing there, Christy, real quick
before we move on?
Yeah, Chuck, what I like about you taking those three archetypal questions, where are you, who told you?
And where have you taken your hunger and thirst?
And what have you eaten? Have you eaten?
Yeah.
I think I grew up with questions not being compassionate, but questions were accusations.
Yeah.
And so when I hear Jesus say, "Why did you doubt?" to Peter, or who's left to condemn you, woman? I tend to hear them as like passive aggressive accusations. Yeah. Like, but what I love about the way that you're using these questions is that they are summons. God is summoning us to reflect and move towards places that we would rather avoid, so He can meet us there. And I know that. That was so transformational for me when I began to actually treat myself the way God treats me versus the way that I projected onto God, you know, the way I treat people.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I think it is. I think I grew up in a tradition where I heard that first question, "Where are you?" as an accusation, you know, and then spending more time with it. And this goes way back to the early 2000s and silent retreats that I used to lead where, I had this sense of, okay, so God's walking in the garden in the cool of the day, probably at the same time that God would take walks with Adam and Eve, if you were to sort of play out the story, and looking around saying, "Where are you? Like, I miss you." It was so good. And that word "where" in the Hebrew is actually the first word of the book of Lamentations. It's a word of like lament, of longing, of heartbreak. Like, I miss you. I want you. And so much more compassion than we're used to. And I think particularly when you look at this archetypal story, this primal story that seems to make so much sense of our stories, our hiding, our coping, our fig-leaved masks, there is that sense that, oh, goodness, we're in trouble. He's coming after us, because that's by and large been our experience in the church, probably, and our sense of God, right? But what if God is actually like, "I miss you, and I just want to get to know, like, what's going on? How did you get here in the first place? How can we make it better?" That feels so much different. Mm.
So much more inviting.
Yeah.
Right? So much more tender. Mm-hmm. You deal a bit with attachment theory in your book. And we've covered it here on the podcast. Matt and Ben have talked about it in their book, and I've found it super helpful. In fact, talking about study, I almost did it on attachment, you know, and intimacy with God, because it's so closely related. But maybe talk just a minute to help our listeners know, what is attachment theory? Yeah. And then why do you think it's so helpful as it relates to our Christian life?
Yeah, you know, it just helps put words around our experiences in relationships. You know, we're the story, as the story goes, you know, we're made to be seen and known and loved and delighted in. And I think that's where the biblical story starts too, right? And that's what we need to be, as Dan Siegel says, safe, seen, soothed, secure. And yet our moms and dads are going to fail at that. I've failed at that. My oldest daughter, by the way, is about to start a clinical mental health counseling program. I'm starting here at the seminary I teach at. And I'm dreading it, you guys. Here we go. There are lots of stories to tell. But the reality is that based on the quality of those earliest relationships, we may find ourselves a bit more anxious or a bit more avoidant. I don't see this as, by the way, like, you know, we take personality tests and we love to figure out who we are. I don't see this as like, once you figure out that you're anxious, that defines who you are, because I really think that that there can be multiple sort of lines of attachment in your life. So, which is to say, in my relationship with my mom, there's a lot of anxious attachment. My relationship with my dad, avoidant attachment. And so I've grown up with a mix of that, and people can experience me as either more anxious or preoccupied in my attachment, or more distant and avoidant. So I sort of go both ways, and both inform how I show up. And really both are analogous to the way our nervous system works as well. Mm. We can find ourselves in sympathetic storm where we're constantly on this hamster wheel going, going, going. We can find ourselves in what we might call a dorsal fog, another part of our nervous system, the parasympathetic part of our nervous system, where we're just kind of shut down and distant and avoidant. And it's really important for us to notice, how we show up in relationship. Are we in the stormy, anxious waters? Are we a little bit more distant or avoidant? And how do we get back to the still waters of God? In other words, how do we get back to a place of rest, a place of center? And that's really the work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in part three of your book, you talk about our hungers or, you know, thirst. So there's a metaphor to use. Those are sort of real world metaphors to use to describe our longings or desires, yeah. the things we want.
Yeah.
Chuck, we've talked about this before in person and on this podcast, just how jacked up our Christian spirituality is in relation to desire, mm-hmm. right? We either name it and claim it, or we kill it and suffocate it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, talk to us about the human experience of being hungry.
Yeah.
And how do we come to understand our hunger? Is it due to sin? Is it not? And how should we approach or befriend those things that we long for?
Yeah, I mean, I think our longings are deep and innate and good and beautiful. Our hearts are sort of natively restless. And I think the point of that primal story and the reality of our stories is that we go about grasping after worth, a sense of worth, belonging, and purpose in all kinds of different ways that end up sabotaging joy and delight and goodness and relationship and flourishing. The flourishing that we want. Our hunger, our thirst is good. And a part of the work is to find ourselves more deeply reconnected to our hunger and thirst. But the answer so often is cutting ourselves off from it in the first place. And so in my work, so often when people demonize their longings as leading them to all the bad things that we can get into, you know, all the bad addictions that we get into. Yeah. I invite curiosity. In fact, my posture is not at all to say you're bad, something's wrong, you're living in sin. I want to know, so what did you want? What were you hungry for? What were you thirsty for? What were you longing for? I tell the story in there early on when I was a pastor of a deacon who had an affair, and it devastated the church and the pastors and leaders within the church, and they started going after this guy. How could you do that? And I simply sat down with him and said, "What did you want? What were you longing for?" And he began to weep. Right? I mean, and he's like, "She saw me in a way that I've longed to be seen for the last 20 years." Now, my next sentence wasn't like, well, good, you go ahead and blow up your family and have that affair and alienate your kids. It wasn't that, but we stayed with that longing. And that led actually to deeper conversations with his wife, who he'd betrayed, and the healing work could begin. But it began in curiosity, right? Not in demonization. Yeah. And I think that's just really tricky. We're so used to demonizing our desires.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when we act on desires that are destructive, the modality of how we deal with it doesn't change, right? So we're not curious with our desires until they lead to wrongdoing, and then we condemn them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You know, actually, so I'm just struck, Chuck, by how your posture with that person was a embodiment of the kindness of the Lord leads us to repentance. Mm-hmm. That you weren't intimidated, yeah. or threatened, or contemptuous mm. of something that he knew was wrong.
Yeah,
he didn't need you to tell him.
Yeah,
but rather you welcomed it without fear mm. in the presence of Christ, and there was illumination.
Yeah.
There was enlightenment, right?
Well, there was. And I think the process led us to explore the wound underneath, right?
Yeah.
And so often we get caught up in what's going on up here. And I'd be really curious, Matt, to hear your take as it relates to mammon on this too, right? Because I've got a little card in my wallet that says chase freedom on it, right? And there is that sense in which we take that card and we go to the mall and we're grasping after that thing that we think will make the pain go away. And I'm really curious then about, you know, sort of the wound underneath. What are we medicating when we're doing that? That's what I love in my work as a therapist. I mean, I get to be perpetually curious and I get to go underneath the surface and say, well, really, I hear people say, well, really what I wanted to sense was a sense of worth or attention or affection or belonging or connection or purpose, that I mattered, right? Those are where the real conversations take place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as it pertains to mammon, I don't know, Christy, if you have any thoughts on that. But money is a spectral power. Mm. The pecuniary dominion is, in late modern sort of global capitalistic society, is divine. Mm. I mean, just last night, I was wanting a snack, and I love peanuts in the shell. Mm-hmm. I think it's because I went to like baseball games as a kid, and so I went to look for peanuts in the shell. We didn't have any, so I jumped on Amazon, found a 5-pound bag of peanuts in the shell, and ordered them. And even though I didn't get that sort of snack desire I wanted, mm-hmm. I had the power with, you know, 16 seconds and two thumbs and a calorie and a half to make that appear at my doorstep tomorrow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of extended spectral agency is something that until very recently, only kings and gods had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's a whole sort of, there's a sphere of marketing called neural marketing, where ads are being written, you know, the commercials with the pretty people who come out and they, you know, they get a truck for Christmas with the big bow on it. You know, they're being designed for a particular neurochemical reaction. This is how mammon works to some degree, right?
Yes.
And there is that sense of I've got to have that. I've got to have that feeling that will make that ache go away, that ache of like that our marriage is falling apart, you know, or I'm not really worth anything, or I'll never matter. If I can just have it, that neurochemical high, it'll make the ache go away. And part of the work is to get beneath the desires and to the ache, to the wound underneath, and to ask, well, what's up with that wound? That's the second question, by the way. Who told you? What's the story behind it all?
Yeah.
You know, I'm being really challenged probably because just as a parent, it's one thing for me to try to be compassionately curious with my peers or my spouse or people my own age. But then I think about what does it look like to be compassionately curious to my kids when they're having these things that are going on in their bodies, right? They're, you know, and to be able to say like, hey, what's going on there? And to really be patient and loving and compassionate in a picture of God in that way, because I just want the action or the behavior to stop, right? I want behavior modification. And to really be able to dig in and to ask these questions to my kids is a challenge, you know? And yet I think they need us as parents to do that, to model that, because they're not going to do it on their own. Yeah, as we sit here, I'm just like, oh, I should probably circle back around with one of my kids later on after this podcast. So, and maybe in that same vein, you know, an overarching theme in your book is really the necessity and the significance of the love in the Christian life. I'm wondering, like, what have you learned about love? Yeah. And really, I'm asking that because I want to hear the good news, especially for the places in my life where I maybe feel like wondering, like, am I ever going to have healing or is my kid ever going to have healing? So I just wonder if maybe you can share, what have you learned to kind of give us some hope?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I this goes back to the late 90s when I was in a tribe that had it all figured out, and I was a seminarian that got stopped by a counseling professor who told me, if you continue on like this, you're going to be dangerous to the church. Come join some of the work we're doing in our counseling program here, and you'll see more transformation than you can imagine. You know, and I joined up. I did a 2-year counseling degree back in the late 90s, and I was held in a space of love, and I had to face parts of me that weren't really likable. You know, like I had to face within that program, there were women who were reflecting back to me, "You're arrogant and you're certain, and we don't like being around you. And we're so unhappy that you're part of this counseling program." I mean, they were reflecting back to me their experience of me. I had to begin to reckon with my misogyny, all sorts of stuff, right? But, and that was really hard. But I was held in a space where I was invited to so much more. I was loved, right? And I'd sit with a supervisor each week and a therapist each week. And they'd see that so much more in me. You know, they had a sense, a vision of who I could become, right? And it's really interesting, you two. Like, I think it was during that time I was in a tribe that wasn't very curious. And that's where I found my way to more contemplative spirituality. I often say nowadays my favorite reformer is St. Teresa of Avila, another 16th century mystic, right? But particularly the women mystics, Hildegard, Lady Julian of Norwich, St. Teresa of Avila, were the ones who invited me to explore my emotions, my body, things that I sort of wasn't allowed to explore, you know, as a male seminarian in my particular ecclesial world and tradition. Yeah. And in that, what's so compelling is like capital L love. That's what you hear. That's what you see. That's how the story is told. Mm. And I began to realize I was told the story in a way that was bent toward how bad I was and how bad the world was. And I don't want to minimize that, because obviously all of us are trying to name the realities, the power of Matt. I follow Matt on X, right? And he's trying to name these realities of the pain of the world. But at the same time, I'm really convinced that God is safe, and that we can find our way to places, relationships, and places even within where we can experience the still waters and the unfathomable love that we all long for. That's become my inner reality. It's hard to put into words, though, but it's a much better story than we've been told, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, a word from a sponsor. All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I recently have just been practicing in my prayer life addressing God as love.
Yeah.
That's it.
Beautiful.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's a constant reminder to me and to my emotions and to my body and of who he is. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think Chuck, you're pointing us towards, and as we approach closing here, you're pointing us towards a spirituality that takes seriously what it means to love ourselves. Mm. Love is very much an embodied between the spaces dynamic experiential thing. And I think for much of my life, I cogitated love. Love was a definition.
Yeah.
Or love was a series of propositions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the reasons I like attachment theory and other things is because a secure attachment is essentially an attachment in which someone feels loved.
Yeah.
Right. And how that changes everything about us, mm-hmm. like neurologically, right? Biochemically, we are different people when we are loved, and how that power, that transformational power, we could even say, it is desperately needed at the center of whatever Christian spirituality will endure for the rest of this century. And so I just want to thank you on behalf of, well, on behalf of me, but on behalf of all of us for doing this work. I feel like you're hewing out ways, this book in particular, how can we love ourselves as Christ loves us so that we can then experience Christ's love more genuinely, more sincerely. I just want to say thank you for that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the only way we'll be able to practice it in relationship with one another is if we can do it within at some level, right? And that takes some work. I try to will myself to love people that I don't like very much. And that doesn't often work. But even last night, real quick, I was finding myself pretty judgmental of someone who I had experienced as distancing from me in a way that I was taking personally. And so I was stewing in my judgments and even thinking of ways that I might be able to sort of passive aggressively get the word to this person that I'm hurt. And I mean, it's incredible where we go with this, right? When we're trying to practice love. And I sat with it, sat with the feeling, let it go a little deeper within me. And I realized, oh, what I'm feeling is unseen, missed, unloved. I'm feeling some shame. I'm feeling kind of ignored. And I put my hand on my chest and I begin to breathe. And I go into this sort of prayer room that internally, which looks a lot like a Scottish castle, and imagine Jesus smiling. And I had this experience of Jesus saying, come in, it's okay. So you're feeling shame and you're and a deep breath and an exhale. And the judgment sort of dissolved, right? And I wonder what it would be like if we took a little bit longer with some of these feelings, right? That keep us from one another, keep us from loving well, and let ourselves just go a little bit deeper and experience a bit of transformation within with these parts of us that are angry, ashamed, confused, enraged, especially now with everything going on. I don't know if y'all have been paying attention to the news, but there's a lot going on right now. And there's a lot to be judgy about. So how do we slow down, I guess, and pay attention to what's really going on within us? So that we can love.
Right? Yeah. I received that admonishment, Chuck, as essentially to take dominion of our bodies. You know, to become people who take seriously that our faculties and our affections are ground zero for how we are to express Christ. Right?
So,
Well, Chuck, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for this book that we didn't really get into, like the exercises at the end of each section you lead people through. But I just want to commend those exercises. I feel like the books I enjoy reading today are the books that get me out of reading and into sort of participating with the reading. And I felt like you did I felt like I was in your office with you as you led me through how to metabolize or appropriate what you were teaching. So just thank you for that too. Where can people find you? You mentioned X. I know you're there tweeting out contemplatives and such like that. But where can people find you if they want to?
X, Instagram, Reds, I guess, all at Chuck DeGroat, and www.chuckdegroat.net would be the website. And now, by the way, I'm really interested in Christy's research. So, I'm going to be, acting on that curiosity and wanting to learn more, Christy.
Oh, thank
you. Really good. Really important.
Thank you.
We still have a podcast to record, with Chris talking to Christy about her dissertation. So Chuck, if I remember, I'll send that to you.
Thanks for all you do, friends.
Yep. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you. I really like Chuck.
Yeah, I do too. Is that the first time, Christy, you've been on a chat with him?
Our circles have like crossed with different people, but I've actually never met him. So it's just fun. Like, I've heard stories about him and I have friends that know him and all that kind of stuff. So it was good. He is, you know, obviously he's a counselor, but he embodies what he writes about. And And to me, that is like so significant for any author, honestly. He's not just a talking head, you know, like he really is living that out and practicing it in a real way. And I just really appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And, you know, this book, you heard him say compassionate curiosity.
Right.
He makes a lot about love. He talks about befriending and facing emotions or reactions. I mean, so one of the reasons why I think I appreciate Chuck so much is that he confirms the stuff that we're doing.
Right. Exactly.
So that we don't, it's in it, and we haven't been working on it together, you know, but we've been mining the same Christian tradition and Christian spirituality and using some of the same language and training or talking about the same processes. Yeah. And so, that makes me super excited because I feel like, I feel like, okay, maybe we are onto something, but also B, like more people need to receive the riches and the wealth of this tradition. And I'm really glad that Chuck is writing, as a trained therapist, as a seminary professor to an audience that maybe we wouldn't get. And I'm glad to introduce our audience to him. So just wonderful.
Right. Yeah. And I have some homework now. I feel like after that, I'm going to circle back around with one of my kids. And honestly, there's probably some inner work. It's not just about my kid. You know, like sometimes when something happens and you react, I'm sure there's stuff going on with my kid, but there's also stuff going on in me, right? And there needs to be some, let me just pause and be aware and tend to what's going on inside of me. And that happened on that podcast. So
yeah, good.
I have some homework.
Great. Can I share that? That actually happened to me yesterday and during a counseling appointment.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting with this new counselor. He's probably 10 years younger than me, 15 years younger than me. And I'm noticing I'm getting a little like agitated, annoyed. I feel like a wall going up. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do some EMDR, which is a trauma therapy. And he starts asking me questions. And then after the second question, he's like, hang on, I need to grab my book to make sure I ask the right questions. And he comes up and he grabs this book and he opens to a page and it's like these pre-questions to doing the EMDR. And I immediately got like, I felt rage or anger. And I felt like my body shut down, my mind just shut down. Like I couldn't think. He asked me a question. I tried to answer it, but my brain was like, nope. Mm-hmm. And I sort of like waited out the session and I'm riding home. And I think it would have been easy for me to just, the story I was telling myself is this guy isn't competent. He doesn't know what he's doing and it's not wise for you to trust him and put him on the list, the long list of like, you know, people that you wanted to help you, but couldn't or didn't. Right. But I noticed like the rage and the shutting down. And I was like, why is that such a problem for me? You know, like I forget stuff all the time, mm-hmm. you know? And I realized that like I've had over and over and over again in my life, people in authority or people I trusted, like let me down or hurt me. And so in that moment, I think my body was sort of like preparing for that to happen again.
Sure.
You know? And you know, I need to talk to Sharon about that. I need to process that more with probably Ben and Spencer and other people in my church.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that I was able to be curious about it rather than just fire my therapist.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
Yeah. And naming it then helps you be able to like actually navigate it, bring those people in to help mm-hmm. you process that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
And move towards pain.
Yeah.
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 Well,
if I'm honest, you started that story, Matt. And for a split second, I was like, oh no, he is not going to tell a joke right now. Are you kidding me about his counselor? That's so not appropriate. And I'm so glad it was a real story. All of a sudden I was like, oh no, this is for real. This is for real. Yeah. Without saying a joke, I do want to say just in a celebratory way, for those of you who are listening, who are kind of like, oh my gosh, this feels like so much work. Even as you tell your story of like navigating anger and rage, that's hard. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
And it's really worth it. And And just this past week, I had a meeting with somebody that was connected to a community that I was really hurt by. And I was a little bit nervous about going into the meeting. I wasn't quite sure what it was all going to be. But in reality, the meeting was amazing. Like, so good. So, like, not once did my body experience the trauma and the angst and the pain and the whatever. And I got out of the meeting and I got in my car and I literally texted my counselor and said, I just want to celebrate and throw confetti for the healing that has happened because I just sat for 2 hours and I explained what happened. And so I guess just for listeners who kind of feel like, oh my gosh, there's so much work to be done. There may be a lot of work to be done, but healing is possible and we can throw confetti and celebrate the places where there has been growth and goodness. So.
Amen.
Yeah.
Christy. Amen. What kind of shoes do chickens wear?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. What kind of shoes do chickens wear?
Reebok, bok, 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 box.
I'm going to tell my kids that one. All right, friends.
Until next
Peace.
Time. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.